The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Drop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, we had us quite the weekend of sports. I mean, football was great. College football was great. Boxing was great. We had the playoffs and baseball are just rolling right around the corner. So we had some great baseball this weekend as well. So let's just get right into the week two NFL recap and get into this insane weekend of football that we had. So let's go ahead and start it off with The New York Giants at my Dallas Cowboys. So this game, I had about 12 heart attacks, I believe, during this game because it was so absolutely insane. Even when it was done, I was like, I can't believe I just watched that game. I can't believe that happened. I can't believe that's what just, I couldn't believe that's what happened in that game. It was literally just like back and forth the entire time. Just insanity and just crazy plays and so much offense by both teams. Tons of stupid penalties by the Giants, and it was just absolutely nuts. And then, of course, it would go into overtime because that's just the way that game went, especially the second half, because the fourth quarter, the Giants ended up scoring 21 points and the Cowboys ended up scoring 20 points. And because they just went back and forth on basically every single play. So in the fourth quarter, Russell Wilson throws the most perfect pass of all time that I have ever seen in my entire life. And I pretty much thought the game was over because there was like 28 seconds left to go, I believe. At that point, it just kind of felt like, oh, that was it. And then the Cowboys magically get into field goal range and Aubrey knocks in a 64-yard field goal to tie the game and send it into overtime. And overtime is just the exact same thing. It's just back and forth and who's going to get it and who's going to stop them. And both teams ended up getting the ball a couple of times, but Russell Wilson made the biggest mistake of all by throwing an interception, and then that just helped the Cowboys, gave the Cowboys the ball with 2 minutes left to go in overtime. They were able to get in field goal range, this time a 46-yard field goal. So it was pretty, it's definitely a makeable range for Aubrey, who walked it off in overtime. Cowboys got the win 40-37. Like I said, one of the craziest games I've ever watched in my entire life. Russell Wilson had 450 yards. Dak Prescott had over 300 yards himself, but it was just nuts. And it's so nice to see the Cowboys have a ground attack again. Javonte Williams had 97 yards and a touchdown. Malik Nabers, the wide receiver of the Giants, had 167 yards and two touchdowns. It was just one of the most insane games I've ever seen. And thankfully, the Cowboys were on the winning side of that one because I don't think I could have I could have expunged all that energy yesterday and watched them lose that. Even worse would have been a tie, though, because when they got the interception with 2 minutes left to go, I was like, the way this game has gone, it would not surprise me if it ended up as a tie, and that would have been way worse than a loss, in my opinion. So thankfully, the Cowboys were able to get the win and beat the Giants 40-37. Then we had another crazy game, even though the score doesn't say it was crazy. There was still some craziness in this one. Seattle Seahawks at the Pittsburgh Steelers. DK Metcalf, this of course is him going up against the his old team, the Seattle Seahawks. He actually had a solid game. He had a touchdown in this one. But it was pretty much all Seahawks in the second half, especially because the Steelers made this really boneheaded play where, because you know the kickoff rules change every 5 minutes, it feels like. Well, this year, part of the kickoff rule is if it lands in the in this certain area, somebody has to touch it. And if you do not touch it, if you just let it roll into the end zone, you're fucked. And that's basically what happened. It's a Steelers player. He actually did touch it, rolled into the end zone, and the Seahawks ended up snagging the ball and getting a touchdown, and that basically changed the entire trajectory of the game. Seahawks ended up hanging on to the win 31-17. Sam Darnold, 22 for 33, 295 yards, two touchdowns. And Kenny Walker III had 105 yards on the ground and a touchdown himself. I've got to say, though, this Pittsburgh Steelers defense, so the thing about this team has been they've been led by the defense. And got to say, these first two games from the Pittsburgh Steelers, they've had some terrible-ass defense. So it's going to be interesting to see if this is just a kind of a let's-start-the-season-off-slow thing for the defense, or if they just are not that good on the defensive side of the ball, which would be crazy to say about the Pittsburgh Steelers. Then we had the Jacksonville Jaguars at the Cincinnati Bengals. The Bengals got the win in this one, 31-27, which is kind of shocking because they lost Joe Burrow early in this game. And not only did they lose him in the game, he's probably gone for the season. I mean, he's going to be gone for a good chunk of the season. He's definitely out for 3 months. He's got turf toe. He's going to end up having surgery on the turf toe, and he's going to be out at least until December. So we'll see what happens. But I feel like at that point in December, the Bengals will probably be well out of the playoff hunt. So why would he come back? So I kind of feel like we have seen the last of Joe Burrow for this season, which sucks because it's only week two. But that's just what happens. But in the actual game, this was another kind of back and forth game where they just went back and forth with each other. Trevor Lawrence, he actually had a very, very good game in this one. 24 for 42, 271 yards and 3 touchdowns. It was just the Bengals were too difficult to stop. Ja'Marr Chase had 165 yards and a touchdown, and they were just able to hold it down 31-27. Then we had the Chicago Bears at the Detroit Lions, and got to say, Ben Johnson, he was the offensive coordinator with the Detroit Lions, took the Chicago Bears job, and he got sunned in this one. The Lions went off 52-21, and it was just all Lions all day. There is nothing to even say about the Chicago Bears. They do not look good on offense, and getting 52 points dropped on you don't look like you're good at defense either. On the Lions side of things, though, Jared Goff went 23 for 28, 334 yards and 5 touchdowns. Jahmyr Gibbs on the ground, 94 yards and a touchdown. And just a really, really efficient day for the Lions, especially because, you know, week one, everybody was like, oh my God, they lost Ben Johnson. This team is never going to score another point ever again. And then they go up against Ben Johnson the following week and drop 52 on him. So big game from the Lions. Then we had the Los Angeles Rams at the Tennessee Titans. This one was close for a minute, but then the Rams pulled away in the second half. They got the win 33-19. Matthew Stafford went 23 for 33, 298 yards and 2 touchdowns. And Davante Adams showed out in this one, which is no shock there. He had 106 yards and a touchdown. And Cam Ward, he had a crazy, insane touchdown pass himself. His first touchdown of his career as well, since he was just drafted number one overall by the Tennessee Titans. And like I said, it was a crazy one. He was on the run, threw it across his body from the right side to the left side, and boom, scored a touchdown. But that was not enough to get the win in this one. Then actually another crazy game between the New England Patriots and the Miami Dolphins, which is actually not shocking because these two teams tend to have crazy games, but it was back and forth from the start. It looked like the Patriots were going to run away with it, but then the Dolphins, they came back in the second quarter scoring some points, but then the Patriots started to pull away in the second half, and they ended up getting the win 33-27. And it was a pretty solid day offensively from the Dolphins. It's just they weren't able to hang on to this one. And they had some really bad plays at some really critical moments, including the interception from Tua, and it just was not a good game. I mean, even though the Dolphins put up points and competed, they just have not really looked good on the offensive side of the ball. And like I said, even though they put up some points, they just are not getting the job done. And I would not be shocked if we see the coach of the Dolphins get fired here in the next month or so, if they keep playing this terribly. Then we had the San Francisco 49ers at the New Orleans Saints, and Mac Jones had a very solid game. He went 26 for 39, 279 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Did help having Juwan Jennings back. He had 89 yards and a touchdown, but they were just able to hang on 26-21 in this one. They were missing both George Kittle at the tight end position, and then, of course, Brock Purdy at the quarterback position. But like I said, Mac Jones looks like he held it down. But the Saints were definitely trying to make a run there. And the Niners, got to say, did not look that impressive on the offensive side of the ball, even though they are 2-0 to start the season. Then we had the Buffalo Bills at the New York Jets, and the Buffalo Bills absolutely obliterated the Jets 30-10. Cook On the ground, he had 132 yards and two touchdowns, and he was pretty much the dude on the offensive side of the ball. Very quiet day for Josh Allen, 14 for 25 and only 148 yards. So like I said, that's a quiet day for Josh Allen, but still a big-ass win for the Bills over their division rival Jets. Then we had the Cleveland Browns at the Baltimore Ravens. This one started out close, but then the Ravens just absolutely opened up a can of whoop-ass in the second half and just went off. They got the win 41-17. Lamar Jackson, huge day, 19 for 29, 225 yards, and four touchdowns. Then another crazy game between the Denver Broncos and the Indianapolis Colts. This one, it was just back and forth, and then the Broncos missed a field goal. The Colts missed a field goal, but then there was a penalty by the Broncos, so they were able to get another chance at the game-winning field goal, and they would walk it off 29-28. Daniel Jones looks like he's fitting right in with this Indianapolis Colts team. He went 23 for 34, 316 yards and a touchdown. Who knows how long that's going to last, but hey, the first two starts for him, but right at the gate, he has looked really solid. And then, of course, Taylor on the ground had a huge day, 165 yards on the ground for Taylor and the Indianapolis Colts. Then we had the Carolina Panthers at the Arizona Cardinals. Cardinals were just able to hang on to this one. They pretty much had the lead the entire way. But then the Panthers made this nice fourth quarter run where they had 13 points in the fourth quarter. But the Cardinals were able to hang on and just on the final drive for the Panthers, basically, they were able to sack Bryce Young, and that was the end of that game. But like I said, this Panthers team, I feel like they've got a lot of life in them. It's just they're going to struggle a lot. But I feel like there's going to be games where they're really in it, and they'll actually get wins in these ones. But they did not get the win in this one. Cardinals got the win 27-22, but Bryce Young, he did have a solid day, 35 for 55, 328 yards and three touchdowns. So even though he had the sack on the final drive there, it still was a pretty solid day for Bryce Young. And you like to see him push it that way and just give them that drive, that spark in the fourth quarter that they got. But the Arizona Cardinals, they were just able to hang on to this one. And then we had the Super Bowl rematch from last year, the Philadelphia Eagles at the Kansas City Chiefs. And the Eagles just held on to this one 20-17. But even though the score was close, the Chiefs were getting whooped for most of it. It was kind of close in the first half. But then the Eagles, they just really just stuck to their game plan. They just kept grounding and pounding. And they were just able to get past the Chiefs. I mean, just the Chiefs, the thing about them, and, you know, I said it in the last game, is that they did nothing this offseason. They did absolutely nothing this offseason to improve this team in any way, shape, or form. And on the offensive side of the ball, it's all Patrick Mahomes all day. And the first two games have shown that. He went 16 for 29 yesterday, 187 yards and a touchdown. But the thing you don't want to hear is that he leads their team in rushing. So that's the thing with this team is they just can't get it going on the ground. And their receivers, very mediocre right now, other than Travis Kelce, who actually caused a interception yesterday by bouncing the ball rather than catching the ball. It bounced off of his hands right into the hands of the Eagles at a critical point in the game, and that was pretty much the turning point of the game. Saquon Barkley had 88 yards on the ground and a touchdown, and it was just a really solid, efficient day from the Eagles. But I will say there's things about their offense that I see where I'm like, I don't know. Are they struggling? Are they going to be able to make it? Or will they just put it together as they normally do? Because I will say last year I kind of felt their offense and defense was kind of slow moving. And then, hey, guess what? They ended up being the Super Bowl champs. So that just could just be the beginning of the season. But I will say A.J. Brown, he hasn't had a good two games to start the season. And he's been kind of lax, it feels like, on some of his routes. And I don't know if it's him or if it's the play calling or if it's just the offense or whatever. But there were some routes yesterday that if it wasn't A.J. Brown, they probably would have got blown up on. So we'll see what happens with the Eagles. I mean, they're 2-0 and they're the defending champs. And like I said, they kind of had that slow moving team last year. So maybe that's just them. They're a slow moving team that just knows how to win. And then the Sunday night football game was between the Atlanta Falcons at the Minnesota Vikings, and it was field goal fest. As a matter of fact, the first touchdown was not scored until the fourth quarter at the end, And the Falcons got the win 22-6. J.J. McCarthy did not have a good game. As a matter of fact, his first two games, very shaky. I mean, this is his first season. And he's coming back from an ACL injury. So that's very difficult to come back from. You got to get your footing under you. And then, unfortunately, he sprained his ankle in last night's game. So it looks like he's going to be out for the next couple of weeks. So we'll see what happens with the Vikings. if they fall back just a bit, because their backup is Carson Wentz. So he's a very capable backup. But I don't know. Wentz seems to be very much past his prime. But who knows? He's very capable in that brief situation. But the Falcons also did not look good on the offensive side of the ball either. As a matter of fact, last night's Sunday night football game was a pathetic showing of two terrible offenses last night, but not a good showing at all from J.J. McCarthy. He looked very out of it. He didn't look like he was reading in defense well at all. He was under pressure all night, and then even when he wasn't under pressure, like I said, it just kind of felt like he was rushing things and didn't really know a lot of what was going on other than a few plays where he just kind of tossed it up. And, you know, when you've got Justin Jefferson and Naylor and the type of weapons he has, yeah, it can make you look better than you actually are. So that's Sunday night football game. We'll see what happens, though, because now McCarthy's going to be out for at least the next couple of weeks, and it could be up to a month. So we'll see what happens there. Then we have two Monday night football games tonight, which is always great. And also my week two head-to-head with Simon Ruvakaba. I have now caught up to him. I'm only one game behind him. So I went 10-4 this week. He went 7-7. So that's just kind of how it goes. So week one and two, I usually kind of feel like the first week of football is kind of a crapshoot, especially when it comes to making picks, because you don't know what's going to happen. And then you factor in all these injuries and all that kind of stuff. It's just crazy. So let's get to the two Monday night football games. And the first Monday night football game, which is actually on right now, is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the Houston Texans. Right now, the Texans are a 1.5-point favorite. I kind of feel like both of these teams are very similar. They have really solid defenses with very capable offenses, but they're just not very consistent. And you can see a lot of holes on each side of the ball. But I feel like this is going to be a good game. I kind of see them trading back and forth, scoring for the most part. I do think it's going to be not a high-scoring game, but I just kind of feel like it's going to be back and forth and may come down to a final field goal or a final touchdown of that nature. It's kind of a coin toss for me in this one, because like I said, they're both very similar teams, and I could see either team winning it or losing this one. I'm going with Houston simply because they're at home, and they had a very close showing last week, and the Bucs were very close as well. So I just kind of feel like Houston's at home. They should show out this week. And so I've got Houston winning this one 24-20. Simon has Tampa winning this one 30-14. Then we have the Los Angeles Chargers at the Las Vegas Raiders. Right now, the Chargers are a 3.5-point favorite. The Raiders, I kind of feel like they got a lucky win last week. I don't really see a lot with this team. I don't think they're really talented in any way, shape, or form. I think they've got a lot of questions on the offensive side of the ball and a lot of questions on the defensive side of the ball. Whereas the Chargers, they're coming off of a big win over the Kansas City Chiefs last week, and I feel like they're more put together. Of course, Justin Herbert, this is his second year with Harbaugh as his coach, so we'll see how far that progresses along for him. But I just feel like the Chargers are the better team, the more talented team, and the Raiders got to prove it to me before I ever pick them. So I'm going with the Chargers in this one, 27-13, and Simon's going with the Raiders in a close one, 24-22. Then we had us a big fight this weekend, and it was a good fight. And it was between Terrence Crawford and Canelo Alvarez, and congratulations to Terrence Crawford, because that dude, he came to box. That is for damn fucking sure. Canelo, it was for all his belts, basically. This dude, he's held it down for the last 7 years. He has not lost. He has not had his belts, that many belts, for this long time. He has been the undisputed champ for a minute. And for Crawford to move up, I think it's three weight classes he moved up. I know it's two, but I think it ended up being three weight classes he moved up. This dude didn't blink. As a matter of fact, he barely got hit. When I was watching this, it was just straight up domination from Crawford all night. In my personal opinion, Canelo only won one round, and I barely gave him that round, but he won one round. It was, I think it was like the seventh round. It was in the middle, but for the most part, Crawford came out. He was ready to fight. He unloaded a few real solid blows to Canelo's face as well. Neither guy got knocked down. It was not a knockout at all, but it was, what I liked about it is, it, since it wasn't close, you can't argue that Crawford was not the winner. He absolutely 100% was a unanimous decision, went all 12 rounds, but he absolutely took Canelo to school, like 100%. That was, there are no ifs, ands, and buts about it. Crawford owned that ring, and you know, even Canelo, he shouted him out right after it. He's like, I got beat. And you know, we'll see if we have a round two against them. I wouldn't be shocked if they go for it again, because, I mean, it was a huge draw. I mean, it was on Netflix, and it actually ended up breaking a record, I believe. I just saw the headline right before I started recording, so not shocked at all. So they definitely could get some more money if they go up against each other. Not that Canelo's hurting for money. Trust me, that dude's not hurting for money at all. I'm sure Crawford's not either, but if you look up Canelo's draw, I think he's made something overall, his draw has been something like $800 million throughout his career. So, like I said, Canelo ain't hurting for money, but Crawford is not hurting for the wins. He is the undisputed, undefeated champ. He has cemented his legacy for sure, and like I said, he absolutely dominated, and it was awesome to see. I thought it was, I personally liked it. I was rooting for Canelo. I thought Canelo was going to win, but Crawford dominated, and you gotta give it up to Crawford, because he came to fight. He came to take those belts, and that dude took those belts. Hopefully we get a second matchup and Canelo comes with it better, because I gotta say, that was not a good performance from Canelo. I thought it was a very odd performance from Canelo. It kind of looked like the time he got beat by Bivol a couple years ago as well, when he lost, the last time he lost. It was just a very, very weird night from him, but it maybe just, he was taken by surprise by just how well Crawford came out. And like I said, Crawford barely got touched in this one. So congratulations to Terrence Crawford for becoming one of the greatest boxers of all time with that one fight. And what a great fight for him. Moving on to baseball and the top 10 MLB power rankings for this week. We only have a couple more weeks of baseball, and we will be at the playoffs. September 30th is when the wild card playoffs begin. So we only have a couple of more power rankings. So this is probably it. These are probably the teams that are going to make it. These are the most competitive teams. And we finally have us a team. We have a couple teams that have clinched playoff spots, but we have us a team that's eclipsed the 90-win mark as well. So let's get into number one on my top 10 MLB power rankings for this week. Remains the Milwaukee Brewers. Overall record of 91-59. So this is the team to first break the 90-win plateau. 5-5 in their last 10 games. This past week, they lost a series to the Texas Rangers, and then took the series over the St. Louis Cardinals, and with the win over the Cardinals, I believe it was on Saturday, that's when they clinched the playoff spot and became the first team of the season to clinch a playoff spot. So the Brewers are in. Then at number two on my top 10 MLB power rankings are the Philadelphia Phillies. Overall record of 89-61. They're 8-2 in their last 10 games, and this is the hottest team in the league right now. And you don't want the Phillies coming into the playoffs hot, because this is my World Series pick. I picked the Phillies versus the Tigers, and I've got the Phillies winning it all. And this is why. I just think they're stacked, but they are a second-half team. And when they coming in hot into the playoffs, watch out. And this team is coming in hot into the playoffs. This past week, they took the series over the New York Mets and over the Kansas City Royals. And guess what? They clinched the playoff spot themselves. So the only two teams right now that have clinched playoff spots are in the National League, and that is the Milwaukee Brewers and the Philadelphia Phillies. Then at number three on my top 10 MLB power rankings are the Toronto Blue Jays. Overall record of 87-62. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games. This past week, they took the series over the Houston Astros and swept the Baltimore Orioles. And they are also close. They're closing in on clinching a playoff spot. Unfortunately for them, they've had to deal without Bo Bichette, who is their dude. I mean, he started off the season on the injured list. Then he took some time to get heated up, and then he really just took off the second half of the season. But now he's been on the injured list the last week and a half, 2 weeks-ish, about that time. And he's definitely expected to come back for the playoffs, so they're definitely going to need him. But outside of Bichette, they are really dominating with the pitching. They're dominating with the defense, and they look really good at the plate as well. So they're having zero issues scoring, but they're definitely going to need Bichette if they're going to make a playoff run. Then at number four in my top 10 MLB power rankings of the Detroit Tigers, overall record of 85-65. They're 5-5 in their last 10 games. This past week, they took the series over the New York Yankees and lost the series to the Miami Marlins. They did dodge a bullet, though, because Tarik Skubal, he was injured the other day over the weekend. And they didn't know if it was going to be bad. Turns out it's just a strain. It looks like an oblique strain. And he's only day-to-day because they are going to need him if they're going to make any type of playoff run. While they have a lot of depth at the pitching position, Skubal's the dude, and they're not going to go anywhere without Skubal. So they definitely need him to be healthy. So he may not even miss his next start. So at least they dodged a bullet with that one. Then at number five on my top 10 MLB power rankings of the New York Yankees, overall record of 83-66. They're 6-4 in their last 10 games. This past week, they lost the series to the Detroit Tigers, but won the series over the Boston Red Sox. And it's just with this team, they have a lot of talent. They add a lot. They have a lot of depth. There's zero issues with them scoring runs, and their starting pitching is really deep as well. It's just the defense. The defense has been their Achilles heel all season long, and I wouldn't be shocked if it costs them. Now, with that being said, they are probably one of the hottest teams in the league right now, besides the Phillies, but definitely in the American League. And you look at it, and if the Tigers start to struggle, if Toronto starts to struggle, you kind of look at it and go, are the Yankees going to be back in the World Series? Because that's how much depth they have. That's how much offense they can provide. And, I mean, they've got two aces. I mean, Max Fried is an obvious ace, but Rodon, he's an ace too. And those two guys, you got them coming at you 1-2, two games in a row. It's going to be real difficult to score on those guys and then keep up with the Yankees' batting order. Then number six on my top 10 MLB power rankings of the Chicago Cubs, overall record of 85-64. They're 5-5 in their last 10 games. This past week, they took the series over the Atlanta Braves and took the series over the Tampa Bay Rays. And they're just really trying to keep up with the Brewers. It doesn't look like they're going to be able to overtake the division, but they definitely are a wild card team. And I just kind of feel like this team's just ready to make a playoff run, hit the playoffs. They're getting some dudes back. They got Tyone back from the injured list. So they are starting to get some of their injured guys back. And hopefully that will help them in the postseason. Then at number seven on my top 10 MLB power rankings of the Los Angeles Dodgers, overall record of 84-65. They're 6-4 in their last 10 games. This past week, they took the series over the Colorado Rockies and over the San Francisco Giants. Some more injury news for them, which it just kind of seems to pile up every single week, is now they're missing catcher Will Smith. He is now on the injured list, and that's a big blow to this roster offensively and defensively. He's a huge deal for this team. I mean, you don't really hear about him, but he is a big deal for this team. So, but with that being said, the Dodgers have been able to overcome that all season. They've been battling through injuries to big-time players from day one, basically, and here they are. Still at the top of their division, and while they're struggling just a bit, Mookie Betts is now starting to get going, and the playoffs are right around the corner. So Mookie Betts getting hot. Freddie Freeman's been having a phenomenal year, and then, of course, Ohtani. So you can never count the Dodgers out, even when it looks like they're slumping. Then at number eight on my top 10 MLB power rankings of the San Diego Padres, overall record of 82-68. They're 6-4 in their last 10 games. This past week, they lost a series to the Cincinnati Reds, but took the series over the Colorado Rockies, and they're really just trying to keep pace with the Dodgers. And it's just funny, like I said, they basically mirror each other. Once the Dodgers get going, that's when the Padres get going. And then when the Dodgers go on a losing streak, the Padres go on a losing streak. So that's just why they are unable to really catch up to the Dodgers, but they are definitely keeping pace in the wild card. And you really got to look out for this Padres team because they have it. They're able to get it going offensively. They're really solid on the defensive side of the ball. And they're starting pitching. It's shaky, but they've got some solid dudes. So we'll see what happens with the San Diego Padres team as the postseason approaches. Then at number nine on my top 10 MLB power rankings of the Seattle Mariners, overall record of 82-68. They are 9-1 in their last 10 games. This past week, they took the series over the St. Louis Cardinals and over the Los Angeles Angels. And Cal Raleigh becomes the he ties Mickey Mantle as the only switch hitter to hit 54 home runs in a season. And I mean, just the season Raleigh's been having is just absolutely phenomenal for the Seattle Mariners. And it looks like they're going to make the playoffs. I mean, there's a couple of weeks, like I said, a couple of weeks left, and they're 9-1, and they're basically one of the hottest teams right now. So it's pretty much going to take a really epic collapse from them over the next couple of weeks. They did overtake the Houston Astros for the division. So they do have the division lead right now. And they're still in line for the wild card, even if they lose the division lead. But the Seattle Mariners, definitely one of the hottest teams right now, and getting the job done. And this is the time of the year that they want to get hot. And then rounding out the top 10 MLB power rankings of the Houston Astros, overall record of 81-69. They're 4-6 in their last 10 games, and that's really why they've lost their grip on this division. And it doesn't look like things are getting any better for them right now, because they just keep on sliding, it feels like. And this is not the time of year you want to be sliding. This past week, they lost the series to the Toronto Blue Jays and took the series over the Atlanta Braves. But they are getting some good news. It looks like Isaac Paredes, he's going to be back. He should be back sometime this week, they're expecting. But definitely, he should be here in the next week or so, which they definitely are going to need, because he was a huge source of offense for them prior to his injury. And with the playoffs right around the corner, and I'm expecting the Astros to make the playoffs, whether they win their division or not, they're definitely a team that looks like they're ready to make the playoffs. But they got to get some wins under their belt, and they're definitely going to need Paredes to get some of those wins. All right, y'all, enjoy the week of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Wednesday.